It's Focus on WYLL. Well, it's that hazardous time of year when it's easy for diseases like powdery mildew and blight to threaten the health of your plants, and it's easy for pests like water beetles and spider mites to invade your garden. I'm Chris Berube, and coming up today on Focus, horticulture expert Sandy Mason joins me to talk about the best ways to protect your garden from unwanted diseases and insects. We'll also discuss how and when to shield your garden from the elements this summer, when weather like wind, heavy rain, and hail can all but level your flower beds. And of course, we'll welcome your calls and questions about your lawn and garden and anything else that you've got growing or not growing around the house or in your backyard. Join me today and join the conversation with University of Illinois horticulture expert Sandy Mason. That's all coming up on Focus on WYLL 580 AM after the news. You're listening to Focus on WYLL 580 AM. I'm Chris Berube, and today on the show, it's kind of that hazardous time of year for gardeners when it's easy for diseases like powdery mildew and blight to threaten the health of your plants and for pests like water beetles and spider mites to invade your garden. Well, today on Focus, horticulture expert Sandy Mason is joining us to discuss gardening, how to protect your garden, how to look out for problems. Sandy, hello. Welcome to Focus.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. If you have a question for Sandy about your garden, about what's growing, about why things aren't growing maybe, about problems that you're having, please give us a call here in our studio, 217-333-9455. You can also reach us online, will-talk@illinois.edu. and Focus 580 on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to tweet us a photo of your garden today, if you're having problems or you just want to show us a really nice garden, feel free. Again, that's Twitter, Focus 580. So, Sandy, it's been a crazy week.
It really has. It's been one of those things, depending on where you are, you know, we've gotten a lot of threats of storms. I think especially wind. That's been, unfortunately, one of the things that we kind of get into in this part of the world. And I think in certain areas, it looks like we didn't get quite as bad as maybe the eastern United States got recently with the heavy winds. But people may have noticed that with some of their newer plantings, especially because anything that's new, especially maybe they just planted a new tree or whatever, you know, anything that has succulent leaves on it, boy, we get those high winds, and it looks almost like they've been burnt. You know, the leaves just don't look good at all. So that's one of the things you always have to think, okay, if something isn't looking so good, what happened a couple of days before? Did we get high winds or something like that? And often we can sort of trace some of the things back to that. Although, you know, this has been, you know, we love having the kind of cool, moist spring that we've had. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the plant diseases problems, they love that weather.
They thrive
too.
In that kind
they
of weather.
They thrive, absolutely. So fun. Fungi and bacteria and stuff love that kind of weather. And so we are seeing a certain number of leaf disease problems, those kind of things. So that's when you kind of have to do that CSI kind of, okay, what happened recently? You know, what else is going on? What else can I see? Those kind of things to sort of figure out what's going on.
Well, we've seen, we're going to see some more precipitation next week, according to the forecasts. Are we getting to that point where we're going to have to start covering gardens? Is it getting that bad?
Covering as in
protecting them from how much rain we're receiving.
Yeah. You know, really at the point, it obviously it depends on where you live, but we really are getting to that point where we actually need some moisture. You think you're never going to say that sometimes when we get rain after rain after rain event. But right now, you know, with the higher winds, that also dries things out. The high temperatures, high winds dry things out and certainly dries the soil out. So we actually could use a little rain right now, but not a lot. You know, maybe a nice inch. You know, if I could sort of dial in what I'd like to have, you know, just an inch of rain a week.
So you had
nice.
You had
That's
your weather.
That's my druthers.
You invented your weather machine, for example.
Yes, my weather machine would just automatically give us maybe in the early morning. You know, so it doesn't interrupt people's plans too much. A nice inch of rain, gentle rain, no wind. So that's Sandy's world. So. We'd like to see that. So we really could use a little bit of rain here. So people may have to find, especially on new plantings, they may find they actually have to do some watering now if they haven't already. So anything that's new plantings, containers, those kind of things are going to dry out faster. So they may find they really do have to do some watering now.
Now, we're getting into hail season a little bit. We've seen a little bit of hail at this point. What kind of a threat is hail posing this year? And what kind of a threat does hail pose for your garden?
Yeah. Well, certainly because of, you know, when we get these, you know, temperature fluctuations and stuff, hail ends up being kind of an issue. Hopefully we're past that point now, but, you know, it may be. I'm not a weather person, so I couldn't quite tell you that for sure, but hopefully we're past that. But it really is one of those things that probably what I've seen typically when it comes to hail damage is that anything that has a really big leaf, like hostas or any of those types of perennial plants, you'll see, you know, damage from that. But probably longer term damage would be things like trees, especially. I have some trees that, you know, I planted like, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago or so, and I can still see the vague damage from hail when those trees were brand new. So it actually does quite a bit of damage. The tree does a healthy tree does a pretty good job of sort of what's called healing over. They don't heal like we do, but they sort of heal over those wounds. But I can still see that, you know, here 10 some years later, you can still see that hail damage that occurred, you know, so long ago, but when the trees were young. So it's usually those younger trees we probably worry about the most when it comes to hail damage. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not a whole lot we can do about that.
I feel like it's, yeah. Well, it's hard because especially when you have a younger tree, you don't want to give up on it after there's been a hail. And it's hard to know at what point the damage has been bad enough that you have to actually basically get rid of the tree or uproot the tree.
Right. And I think that's really a good point in the fact that, you know, anytime you have any kind of damage, whether it's like hail or wind or anything like that, you know, don't be too quick to get rid of the tree, the plant. Plants are pretty darn amazing, especially after, you know, last year's drought. I have newfound appreciation for just the tenacity of plants and their ability to rebound from really poor conditions, like the drought from last year. So don't give up on them. You know, give them a few weeks. You know, just sort of wait, see what happens. A lot of times, you know, with a little tender loving care, maybe watering, whatever, they'll leaf out again. A lot of trees, certainly if they're halfway healthy trees, have the ability to put on another set of leaves. So they could lose all their leaves and still come back. So don't give up on them too early. That's probably one of the big rules, I guess.
Well, before the show, actually, you and I were talking about just how dramatic and how profound the difference has been between summer and this summer. The drought, I mean, it's surprising that we didn't basically have the drought sort of wipe everything out. Like, it's surprising that there are plants coming back at all.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And in the sense that I think we got a little bit, at least in our area here in Central Illinois, back in September of last year, we actually finally got a little bit of rain and things rebounded a little bit. So I think that was really one of those, at least for gardeners, was sort of that $1 million rain last September, because I think that's what helped out the lawns and trees and stuff like that. So it's amazing how well plants have done.
It's The Gardening Show here on Focus on WYLL AM 580. Give us a call at 217-333-9455 if you have questions about plants that you're growing this year or conditions or anything that we've talked about so far. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have Ron from Atlanta, Illinois with us. Hello, Ron.
Good morning.
Good morning.
30 years ago, I planted a gift of a spruce tree that I thought was plenty far from my garage at that time because it was such a little thing, and now 30 years later, I can't hardly get the car out of the garage anymore because it's monstrous. And I wondered if I could trim it back, and if I can, what do I need to do for precautions not to kill the tree, because the tree is just absolutely gorgeous, and I don't want to damage it.
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing, it gets a little trickier with evergreens because you can't do major pruning on them and have them sort of leaf out again into those, you know, areas where there's no leaves or no needles left. So they're not like, you know, maples and some of those where we can do some, you know, pretty heavy pruning and then those sort of leaf out again on those same branches. So you pretty much have to decide if the branch needs to come, if it's just way too far over, you really need to go ahead and just take the branch back, clear back to the trunk. You know, just take the whole branch off. And I know it seems really dramatic, but if you just cut it off and there's no needles left on that limb, it's just going to die anyway. So you might as well just take it off at the trunk. And you're probably going to have to do some of that, I would imagine.
OK. Can I do that any time of the year?
It's fine. You could go ahead and do that. Actually, you know, we've seen some disease issues with spruces and some needle diseases and stuff. So it'd probably be good to do it, actually. You could certainly do it now. We've had some good rain this spring, and it's drier, so you wouldn't be passing the disease around, those kind of things. So I think it's fine. You could certainly go ahead and do that. Usually we say don't remove more than a third of the tree at any one time. So I don't know how much you need to remove, but to remove a couple branches is not going to be a big deal on a healthy spruce at this point.
Like this tree is probably over 30 feet tall now. Yeah. So, I mean, if I remove some of the ones around the bottom, which is the ones I need to remove, it wouldn't hurt a thing.
Right. You should be just fine.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Ron.
Bye.
Uh-huh. We have another caller on the line right now. This is Pat from Champaign. And Pat, I understand you just planted a fringe tree.
I did, and I've been looking for one for a little while. I'd seen some retusas around, but I really wanted their Virginiana form.
Right.
And I later read, naturally, this is after I planted it, that they are dioecious, and only if you have a male and female will it have the fruiting bodies for the birds in the fall. But nobody seems to know how you can tell it apart. I've looked and looked and looked, and I'm thinking, I don't know. I have trouble sexing rabbits. I don't know how to sex a tree.
I'm not even going there about the rabbit thing. I don't know anything about that either. You look under their petals. I'm making a joke. Attempting a joke at least. Well, usually, to be honest with you, the way I understand it with fringe trees, it's generally the male that's actually the has the more attractive flowers.
And that's exactly what I read.
Yeah. So you probably have a male.
Okay, so any sense of how I might acquire a female?
Yeah, I think probably, and because the males are so dramatic, you're probably going to have to go to someplace that actually handles native plants.
I see.
Yeah, and they would be more likely maybe to have the male and female, the two, because...
So really, I need to find either an urban area where they have lots and lots and lots, or find a specialty...
Yeah, I think you might try a place like Possibility Place.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it's if you go online, Possibility Place, and they're really not a retailer, but they do a lot of native trees and shrubs.
Okay,
lots of
stuff.
I
might even find some information there.
Absolutely, and they're in Northern Illinois.
Possibility Place in Northern Illinois.
They're in Northern Illinois. I can't think of what town they're in. I know whether it's Moni or St. Charles. I can't remember what they're.
But that, I mean, that's not even a bad drive for a nice day.
No, they're not a retail operation where you can just go in there. But what you do is you order, and then you can actually go and pick up.
If an individual
wants to do that. But I would check with them because
I certainly will do that.
Yeah. And when they're in... when they're in flower, you can actually, if someone with a little bit of knowledge can look at the flowers and tell you whether it's a male or female.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they can be sexed when they're in flower.
Oh, so that's basically the only time they don't look that.
Yeah, I don't know now. Possibility Place, but now maybe there is a little difference. But most of the time, it's only in flower that you can tell the difference.
Okay, and I did read that occasionally, either by nature or surprise, I don't know, that a tree will bear both. It will be able to self-produce the fruiting bodies, but I don't have the least idea how to know that. So
well, it is nature being nature. Nature's a wonderful thing. There isn't a lot of absolutes, and so a lot of times, even if they're listed as a male, they'll often have flowers that may have male and female parts on them, or maybe they'll have a few female flowers. So a lot of times, you'll still get some fruit. I'm just not familiar with that particular plant. Whether you will get them for sure.
Oh, I'm just delighted to get some.
They're beautiful.
So Possibility Place.
Yes.
Thank you. And Sandy, if you ever want to see one in bloom outside the Pepsi Bottling Company, which is locked in the evening but open during the day, it is perfect. Lovely up on Anthony Drive.
So nice.
Take a peek some springtime.
Oh, nice. They are beautiful plants.
That was one way where I was able to show my sister who said, you want a what? So I just thought I'd share that.
Yeah, and usually you see the non-native one.
Know what? It may very well be non-native. I haven't even any idea what I bought. I just saw them in bloom down in Arkansas and Missouri, and I thought, dang, I might have to have one of those.
That's kind of the story. That's the story of my life, there, Pat. Yeah. I would say.
Certainly, the story of my life when it goes to my garden. I need one of those.
Pat, thank you so much for calling in.
Bye.
And actually, if you have a beautiful tree or a beautiful garden, something you'd like to show us, feel free to send us a photo on Twitter at Focus580. And if you have any questions about your garden or if you're about to start one, for example, give us a call at 217-333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. You're listening to Focus on WYLL. I'm here with Sandy Mason, horticulture expert from the University of Illinois Extension. And Sandy, we're in that time of the year when we're starting to see a number of diseases come back, a number of diseases start to flourish. One I'd like to ask you about is specifically is black spot, which are we seeing that a lot this year? Are we expecting to see that a lot this year?
Yeah, there's certainly a number of plants that get diseases that look like black spot. Probably roses are the ones that we typically would think of the disease black spot. And it, you know, that's one of the great things about disease is that usually it says exactly what it is. You don't have to guess. So what does black spot look like? It's got black spots. So it really is one of those diseases that there are some rose varieties that are cultivars that are resistant to it. And black spot's a fungal disease. And it's one of those that by the time it shows up, which unfortunately is true for a lot of our leaf diseases, by the time it shows up, it's really too late or maybe too late to do a whole lot of in the way of fungicides or anything like that because it's already sort of infected everything. So a lot of times we sort of find out a little bit too late. But certainly likes fungal diseases love moisture on the leaves. So anytime there's regular moisture on the leaves, like with the spring we've had, but also if people water at night, which is not a good thing, you really want the leaves to stay dry. And that's really, really, really true with roses as well as a lot of other things. But try to, you know, when you water the soil. Don't water the, you know, all over the plant. We think we're doing a good thing by doing that, but actually you may be creating some disease issues. So black spot is certainly going to be one of those diseases that will definitely start showing up if it hasn't already.
And I've got photos of black spot here just on other plants. It's not just for roses. I mean, we're seeing it more and more on other things, right?
Yeah. Sometimes the name changes a little bit depending on what plant it's on. But certainly black spot is certainly one of the big things that we'll see on roses. But, you know, it'll start, we have other problems when we start seeing things on tomatoes. They'll certainly have some spots on the leaves. And a lot of times it's fungal in nature, unfortunately.
Well, we have another caller. Nancy from Savoy is on the line. Hello, Nancy. Nancy, are you there?
Season. I bought two little gem dwarf Norway spruces. They looked lovely in front of my house. My husband and I had a disagreement. He said I should have planted them in the ground over winter, but I brought them into the garage. They did okay, not great. So they look dry right now. So I was wondering, should I plant them in the ground in the winter? Or any advice about how to keep them going?
Yeah. So is the plan to go ahead and plant them now?
Plant them. I've got them in, planters, big planters. And we had the same discussion again. They got through winter, but not great. I mean, they look kind of dry. And so I'm wondering if I have any chance, should I go ahead and plant them or leave them in the planters, you know. I mean, it's decorative. That's why I bought the...
Oh, okay. That's fine. And, you know, there's no reason why, you know, you can't use, you know, evergreens, conifers and stuff in containers, and they look great in the summertime. But then that age-old question is, what do you do in the winter? Well, a couple things. Certainly, depending on the bigger the pot, you know, you may be able to actually leave them outside. Obviously, some pots you can't leave outside because if they're ceramic, they're going to bust up in the winter. Probably one of the things that sort of keep in mind, anytime we have any kind of plants that are these temperate zone plants, so plants that are used to cold winters, they actually need to go through a cold winter. So they actually need that cold period in order to break dormancy and do all the other stuff for the next year.
Oh.
And then it gets harder, depending on, I don't know how big these pots are, it gets harder to do the moisture correctly. So they need to have some moisture in the wintertime, but you don't want them to be too wet in the wintertime. So it just gets harder when we have containers in the wintertime and you're trying to protect the container, but yet still let that plant go through that cold period. So if this was a garage that stayed at 35 degrees all winter long, I'd say not a problem. But unfortunately, a lot of times our garages are just not in that temperature range. So it gets harder to know how much do I water. Has it gotten too cold? Because if you have a really small soil volume in a small container, then the soil freezes completely, and then it thaws out, and then it'll freeze again. And that's really hard on roots. So it just gets a lot more challenging to do it. It's not that it can't be done. It just gets a lot more challenging to sort of figure out, now what do I do?
Okay.
So what you might want to do in the future, so you don't have those challenges, you could always plant them outside, you know, in an unused part of the garden or something. You know, just plant them out there for the wintertime, dig them back up, and put them back in the pots for the summertime. And, you know, you might have a little better success trying to get them through the winter, unless you have that sort of perfect environment where you can, whether it stays cool but not too overly cold. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Or you can always repurchase them every year.
You know, which I may have to do this year. I guess I'll have to wait till. But I mean, it's one of those things. It was the end of the season. When I have them from the house, and
what do you do?
Look lovely. Yeah.
Oh, I know. And then you figure, what do I do?
Right.
So, you know, and I get it. And it's nice just to leave them in the containers. It's just, if it's a container you can leave outside, if you could sort of just stick a whole bunch of mulch around it.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up outside. I was thinking about doing
that. Yep, absolutely. You can do that as long as and just mulch them around the container. And then come spring, sort of, and I've done that with boxwoods and a few other things that I wanted to leave in containers. So that works too.
Well, that's been very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Now let's go back to the phone lines. Linda from Paris, Illinois, who has a question about ginkgo trees. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hi.
My question involves this ginkgo that I planted as a seedling probably 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The third year, we had an unusually warm spell and then a hard freeze.
Right.
And the top part of the ginkgo died, and I thought, oh my, I've lost it. But then up came three shoots from the remaining stub, which is about knee high, and they've continued to grow. Last year, I pruned off the weakest, smallest one of the three, which leaves me with two. It's now about 18 feet high, the tallest
one. Oh, my.
That's pretty tall.
It's done well. I watered it like crazy last summer. But I'm wondering, the shoot that is less dominant is probably goes up within 3 feet of the top of the dominant one. But it's a V, of course, at the next where it starts up. I'm wondering if it would be advisable to prune that, or if I should just cross my fingers and leave it be and hope there's no rot in that V.
Okay. So when you say a V, so when it's coming off the other one, so you can kind of see what's coming on there?
Like, well, they came up together from the stub that was not frozen.
Okay. So when you say V, it sounds like it's a pretty narrow branch angle.
It's fairly narrow. Yeah. And that concerns me.
Yeah, and it should, rightfully so. Your gut instincts are correct. Because usually when we have those, anything that's sort of a V or anything that's sort of less than 45-degree angle, it tends to be poorly attached. And as it gets bigger, eventually it can break off. And so I think, again, your gut instincts are right. I would either, you know, if you don't want to take it all off at this point, to take that less dominant one off completely at the V, I would certainly shorten it and then over time take it off.
Okay, I could shorten it and that would make it easier then in a couple of years or a year.
Yes, and then take it off completely in a few years.
Okay.
Yeah. I would definitely, you want to make that less and less dominant over time.
Right.
Because it's probably eventually going to be one where it gets so big, it would just break that half of the tree. And you don't want to see that.
Right. So, it's such a interesting.
Well, that's great.
It came to me from family and history behind it. So,
good for you.
And I'm afraid it probably is a female, but it's planted far enough from
you never know.
That I don't care if the berries are stinky.
I wondered if you knew about the stinkiness of those. But that's that's all right. But good for you. You got to have those in order to have more ginkgo trees, right?
Right.
It's always a bit of a gamble with ginkgo trees about the smell, I think.
Do they have to have a male ginkgo in the area in order to produce fruit?
That's the theory that yes, but they always seem to have fruit. So there must be enough of them out there that, and for, you know, it is one of those things where most people plant the males. So usually there's plenty of males out there.
Well, of course, when this tree, when this tree's parent was planted, they were assured it was a male.
I've heard that before.
So, and I don't know, but someone, someone told me that if the leaf is has a deep V in it, almost a two-part leaf, that it's more likely to be a female.
Hmm. Now, I have not heard that before.
Okay.
So I don't know how true that is, but we'll...
anyway, we will see.
You'll see.
How long does it take before they start?
You know, they take a long time. It might be 12, 15 years, maybe even 20 years before they actually flower. So by that time, you're already invested in the tree. So it's whatever.
And as I said, knowing what it could do, I planted it far enough away.
Yeah, good for you.
It will not be a problem.
Yeah, good for you. Okay, great.
Well, thanks for calling in, Linda.
Interesting story. Thanks.
Bye.
You're listening to WILL 580 AM. This is Focus, and I'm speaking with Sandy Mason today, our horticulture expert. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, give us a call if you have more questions for Sandy at 217-333-9455. This is Focus on WILL. You're listening to Focus on WILL AM 580. I'm Chris Berube, and today we're joined in studio by University of Illinois horticulture expert Sandy Mason. We're taking your questions about gardening and about anything that you're trying to grow this summer, especially in these perilous couple of weeks where we're seeing a lot of precipitation and the return of many diseases. So give us a call if you have any questions, 217-333-9455. You can also reach us online, will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're trying something new. If you have any photos of problems that you're having in your garden, or you just want to show us a really pretty garden, you can get in touch with us on Facebook at Focus580 and on Twitter at Focus580. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We have Beth from Champaign joining us. Good morning, Beth.
Morning. I just have a question about the proper time to fertilize a rhododendron. I have gotten completely contradictory advice from two different sources, and I have two plants that did very badly over the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think usually what I say is to do it right after they flower, and they pretty much have finished flowering. And that's because that's when they put on a lot of their new growth, is right after they flower. So when you say it didn't do all that well, some of the branches just died back and didn't make it.
It looks that way, yes. And the one that I can depend on the most was the only one I did fertilize last year, and it had maybe a third the number of blossoms on it.
Mm-hmm.
It actually does.
Yeah, so usually I would do, you know, right after they flower, I think it's a good time to do that. And that's on fairly healthy ones, and, you know, they need the, and I'm sure you know this already, they need the acidifying types of fertilizers.
Right.
So that really helps. Do the leaves normally seem pretty green to you? Because that's one indication that they're not, that the soils aren't a low enough pH or not acidic enough.
Yeah, they are quite green.
Okay, so that's good. So it sounds like your pH is okay because they need that acidic soil. Otherwise, the leaves tend to turn yellow. And that's, mm-hmm. for other folks, that's a really good indication that they need certainly acidifying fertilizers, or might even on a higher level, maybe actually need some regular application of sulfur, which is a slower reacting kind of thing for the soil to make it more acidic. But it's a better long-term solution. And it's certainly sulfur is one of those things that can be used even at other times. Like, you know, sometimes I've done it actually in the fall just to sort of help sort of acidify the soil. And it's not necessarily really a fertilizer. It's just trying to actually to go ahead and acidify the soil. So, but it sounds like yours is okay at that point. So probably just acidifying fertilizer would help just to sort of get some new growth going.
All right. And is it too late to apply it now?
I would go ahead and do it because we've had, you know, fairly moderate temperatures and some moisture, those kind of things. So I would go ahead and fertilize them now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks a lot, Beth. And if you have a question for us, give us a call at 217-333-9455. We have a question that just came in on email. This one's a little bit general, but here it goes. It's from Mike, who says, what are Sandy's thoughts on commercial lawn care plans offered by companies like Scotts and True Green? I'm not an avid lawn and garden enthusiast, but I want to have a nice-looking and safe lawn. Should I be worried about any legitimate health concerns related to pesticides, etc.? So that's a pretty broad question in terms of that, but I mean, anything specifically that sort of first-time gardeners should be looking out for when it comes to using these types of products on their lawn?
Yeah, I think, and it actually is true for any pesticides, insecticide, fungicide, whatever you're using, is you have to use them according to label directions. And unfortunately, a lot of times people get into this, well, if a little's good, a lot's better. We tend to do that. Well, you don't do that. Don't do that when it comes to pesticides, insecticides, whatever it is, on anything. When it comes to lawns, I think the biggest thing with lawns is whether they go with Scotts or any of the lawn care programs, you just really have to decide and have a heart-to-heart talk with yourself, as in, what do I expect from my lawn? Do I really want it to be, is my expectation about a lawn to have absolutely no other, weeds out there? It's got to be lawn. It's got to be green all the time. What are my expectations? And what am I willing to do to get there?
Right.
So people need to make that decision on their own. And everybody has their own range, and they should stick with what it is. If you're fine with having weeds out there, clover, whatever, and you're perfectly fine with that, then that's fine. Don't worry about having the step one, step four programs or whatever. Just maybe just fertilize, if you want to go ahead and fertilize once a year in September, that may be just perfectly fine and you're perfectly happy with that lawn. So that you always have to sort of decide on what are my expectations and what am I willing to do and what am I willing to maybe give up? Do I need to, if you're going to fertilize in June for a lawn, you have to water it. You need to water it. Well, am I willing to do that? Does that make sense to me? So I think we always have to think, what are the trade-offs, when it comes to fertilizing, when it comes to using insecticides? And I would also say, if anybody's doing any kind of insecticide type or fungicides, whatever they're using, is to think about spot treatments. If you only have weeds in one spot, just use your weed killer on that one spot. Don't do the whole lawn. You don't need to. So really, if you are going to be using these things, think about spot treatments, but then also think about, is this really all that important? I'm concerned about my dogs or my kids or whatever. Maybe I don't want to go this route. Maybe this is something I'm just going to, whatever the lawn does, as long as it's green, I'm okay with that. So I think that's what people really, really have to think through themselves and not think about, what my neighbor's doing or what anybody else thinks. Just think what's right for me.
Yeah, the question becomes, do I need a golf course lawn or
can
I let it be a
and
little
what
more
are the expectations when it comes to a golf course lawn? And realize golf course lawns are there for, they have a specific purpose. And so lots of things are done to those on a management basis so that they look that way. But does that really make sense for a home lawn?
Right.
Maybe that really doesn't make sense for a home lawn. So, I think that everybody just really needs to get realistic about the expectations of, and it's hard if you think about it, to expect that one whole area is going to be nothing but one particular plant. It's actually kind of tough if you think about it. Nature really doesn't want that. Nature likes the diversity of having lots of things going on in one area. So you really have to really, really have to think about that.
Well, let's take another call. Sherry from Champaign is on the line. She has a question about dogwood trees. Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi there. You have a question?
Okay, I have. Well, I call it Asian dogwood because I've heard it referred to as Japanese, Chinese, Korean. I thought maybe it was considered a dwarf variety, but my tree gets huge. And last year it really suffered from the drought. But every year it looks pretty droopy, especially at the tops. The leaves are just all curled up and dry, and I struggle to keep it well watered because I think I don't know if it's planted in the right place in my yard, but it gets full sun in the afternoons every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that problem going on, and I've been trimming back like the top branches, but every year it just looks bigger than the year before. And I thought that maybe if I took away some of the smaller, like 1-inch branches, and the tree didn't have so much to feed, that would help it in the really hot weather. But I don't know if my thinking's right. And I also have this other problem. I accidentally, not knowing that much about dogwoods, I mulched it up real good, but I mulched it right up to the trunk. And this year I noticed that the trunk, the bark is cracked
mm-hmm.
and falling off down where it meets the ground. I'm concerned about that, obviously. So what can you tell me about
that? Yeah, it sounds like you have lots of things going on with this particular tree. So I would say, and there's a number of different dogwoods. Korean dogwood would be one. I don't know, and that may be the one that you have, but
It leaves out first.
Pardon?
It leaves out first, and then it gets the four pointed.
Yeah, the pointed. Yeah, the petals are pointed. They're petal-like things are pointed. Yeah, yeah. It's probably Korean dogwood. I don't know if any of those are that are really, you know, depends on your definition of dwarf, I guess. But I don't know any of those that aren't going to get 25, 30 feet.
Okay, so that's normal.
Yeah, that's and maybe there are some dwarf ones out there, but the ones that I know of are certainly in that small tree category of in 25, 30 feet.
Okay.
So that would be right in line. As far as, you know, you're absolutely right. As far as the mulch, you really shouldn't put it, you know, 3 inches of mulch is plenty. They like to be mulched. Three inches is plenty, but it shouldn't be touching the trunk.
Nice.
So it should be pulled away from the trunk because they can get rot. Which may be what you're seeing. They actually will rot kind of right at that soil line, which can cause dieback, where the limbs would actually die back some because of that, because it's a root issue as well as
the
trunk issue.
Why the top leaves look so droopy because they're not getting
Could be. We also have seen, because you've got that late afternoon sun, that would also be another, they really don't like that necessarily. And we've had some winds, and if it's not, you know, if it has some trunk damage and it's not getting enough moisture because of that trunk damage, you certainly could see some what looks like kind of droughty-like conditions for it.
So that
certainly would be part of what's going on. So I think probably sort of general care stuff, you know, I mean, you're right, pull the mulch away. Once the bark damage occurs, there's not a whole lot we can do about it other than just good maintenance kinds of things. Water during drought, you know, those kind of things would help. Generally, really...
Will it regrow its bark where it's missing now?
It will probably try to do that. Depending on how extensive it is and how sort of the health of the tree. But they will try to, I mean, that's what trees try to do. And what you can tell is on the outside edge of the damage, they kind of, the inner bark sort of rolls in. You'll see it almost looks like it rolls in. So you can, you know, over time, but there isn't anything you can do other than just general maintenance stuff when it comes to that. And then generally, we wouldn't want to remove branches simply to help them out in drought conditions. So sort of keep that in mind. So because you have to always remember that the branches are what helps the plant. You know, that's where the leaves are. And so it helps the plant to photosynthesize. And actually, the branches themselves are food storage. So every time you remove a branch, you're actually removing some of the food storage as well. So you don't really want to do that necessarily when the tree is under stress by actually removing a lot of branches and that kind of stuff. And it really doesn't help in the long run. So in the future,
I didn't take too many of
yeah. So in the future, so it sounds like it must be growing well if it's getting really big. So it must be something must be right about
it.
So
it was until I cut it back last fall, but it's probably about 20 feet high.
Yeah, so that's
15 to 20
normal. Yeah, so that would certainly be normal realm. Okay, so good luck.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. We have time for one or two more questions with our guest today, Sandy Mason, horticulture expert at the University of Illinois Extension. And we have Denise on the line. Denise, welcome to Focus.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I have a question about a Sargentina dwarf crabapple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I ordered it by mail, and I got the tree, and I put it in. And this is the first year that it bloomed for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just ordered it last year. And I've been researching how to prune it. And I'm wondering what happens when I cut the end off the branches. Will it sprout like two branches from that point or not? What happens
when you wanting it to? Or,
yes, I want it to get bushier. Right now it's kind of like spider legs, you know, long branches without... much variation in the branch structure.
Right. And they kind of look, I will tell you, they kind of look like that in the beginning.
They do.
Yeah,
okay.
They kind of look like that. So you could certainly do some pruning, and they will to some extent. They're not particularly good at it, but you might get like one more branch to come out. But it's not like you're going to get a bunch of them that you can sort of choose from. They don't quite do that. So you kind of have to, you might just give it some time, to be honest with you, since it's a brand new one. And you really don't want to do a whole lot of pruning on a young tree anyway.
You don't? Okay.
Yeah, you really don't. Give them some time, and then you can start making some selections when it comes to actually trying to have it
do something.
Okay. But give it a chance to get established before you do a whole lot of pruning.
How many years? Like how?
I would give it at least 2-3 years,
and you can call you back.
Yeah, and then call me back and say, "What's wrong with this tree?
My tree is 2 or 3 years old now.
Now, what do I do? Yeah. So I would just sort of give it some time. You can do some light pruning and stuff, but really, really let it get established first. And really, more and more, they found it's best not to do a lot of pruning on a young tree. You know, really let them get established and then start doing more pruning on those.
Are excellent.
Okay.
Wow, we.
Okay,
thank
good
you.
Luck.
I don't have to do anything.
I know, see there, you can. Procrastination.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Have
thank
a
you.
Great day.
Sure.
Bye now.
Thanks for calling in, Denise. You're listening to WYLL AM 580. This is Focus, and we have Sandy Mason here, horticulture expert. Sandy, we have one or two more questions. I do want to ask you before we get to those about your garden walks, though, that you're doing.
Yes, this is a great time of year.
Actually,
it's a great time of year to do garden walks. Actually, this Saturday, June 15th, is one that Vermillion County Master Gardeners are doing theirs, June 15th, 10 to 3. It's in the Catlin area, which is, it's just fabulous to see what gardens are out there. And it's a great opportunity to get some ideas. So Vermillion County Master Gardeners are doing theirs this Saturday. Next Saturday, the 22nd, Champaign County Master Gardeners are doing their garden walk, June 22nd. The Village Gardeners are in St. Joe are doing theirs June 30th on a Sunday. And so it's just wonderful opportunities to sort of get some ideas for your own garden and see what's out there. And plus, generally, these are always fundraisers for these groups. And so that's how they're able to do community garden projects, is by doing their garden walks. And then that goes right back into the community. So we love sort of supporting those too. So hopefully people get out and check your local community and see if they're having a garden walk.
And this is kind of the perfect, this really is the perfect time
it
to be going out doing it.
It is the perfect time because plants look great, and especially this year. Stuff just looks super. So check it out.
Well, we have another email question coming in. This one's from Sheila. And Sheila says, we have an ash tree growing inside our old tree stump. Will it survive or should we try and dig it out? And is it too late to plant a pear tree? There's one at a box store close by that's looking pretty distressed, but I want to take a chance on it. So Sheila, questions about risks with trees, basically.
Yeah. It sounds like she answered her own question. I want it, you know, it's a good deal and I want to try it. So it's not too late to plant. Certainly not too late to plant. So if people want to, they can, but you just have to pay attention to watering, to make sure that they get watered properly. And this may be, you know, if it's in a container, you may have to water it every single day if it was in a containerized plant, but get it in the ground and really make sure that you keep enough water on it through the summer. So the other question was on
the ash tree growing inside of the stump of an old tree.
I don't think that's probably a good idea.
How does that even happen, that it grows in the stump of another tree?
It must be maybe one of the suckers or something that's coming off the root system.
Right, okay.
So, you know, again, if they want to try it, they can. But unfortunately, what often happens with ones that are, especially ones that are suckers like that, sometimes they're really poorly attached, and you don't really realize that until they get bigger and then they fall over. So it's one of those things. Again, if you want to take the chance, it's not in an area where you really worry about it later on getting too big. Of course, ash trees are having their own problems now with emerald ash borer. So does that really make sense to keep this ash that's coming up? Yeah, I would say probably not. But if they really want to try it, they certainly could do that if they want to. It sounds like somebody that really has a kind heart when it comes to plants. So.
This is like asking if you can adopt six dogs. It's like, it's not. You really have to evaluate if you can take on six dogs.
I know. So what are the benefits to this for everybody?
You'd alluded to the emerald ash borer. Yeah. Could you give us an update on what's happening with that and the health of those trees right now in Illinois?
It is one of those things. I haven't heard any new we just got through with flight, which would have been their flight season, actually really through May. So we just got through with that. And so they'll be checking traps for the newer locations, you know, looking to see if there's any new locations for this year. Certainly because we found it in Champaign last year, Rantoul year before. So we know it's in this area.
Could you describe the emerald ash borer for people who don't really know what it is?
It really is one of those things. It's a small insect. It's a beetle, and it'll fit on the top of a penny. So it's about the size size of a penny, if you can think about that. And it is bright green, so hence emerald ash borer. And generally during that flight season, you actually can see them. You may actually see them on trees and stuff, and they're very bright green. There are other insects that are bright green and beetles. So just to realize, you know, not every emerald green thing happens to be an emerald ash borer. But so they really are one of those things that during flight season, they can be seen. And unfortunately, it really is quite serious for ash trees in the sense that it doesn't just go to ash trees that are under stress. It'll actually go to ash trees that are that actually are fairly healthy trees. So we can expect some expansion of the area. We know it's here. So people just kind of have, it's one of those things that I probably wouldn't be planting a lot of ash trees at this point.
Right.
You know, if you're expecting for it to have a long-term tree. So it's unfortunate all the way around.
And it's something where you can't really protect against it very effectively.
There are insecticides that you can use if you want to go that route to go ahead and protect them. But just to realize that most of the time those protectants are going to have to be done every year or at least every other year. And so again, does this make sense? Is this something I really want to have to do every year? Or maybe it's time to really think about maybe planting another type of tree nearby, knowing that eventually this ash tree is going to have to come down. If you have a bunch of ash trees, you might think about just taking a few of them out over time so you don't have one big expense all at one time. So it really is one of those things. We know the range is going to expand, so we can pretty well guarantee that. Probably the biggest thing is people should not move firewood. That's probably how these
insects
are
actually. That's where they're living, yeah.
That's how they're moving, is when trees die, then people cut them up, and then they move them around. And it is no coincidence that we're finding these in areas near campgrounds, along interstates or rest areas, because people are moving firewood. So just don't move firewood long distances. Use it local. So we talk about local food.
Right.
It should be local firewood as well. So just use the local stuff.
Let's get that. We will get the local firewood movement
local
going.
Local firewood movement. I'm with you.
The firewood to table movement begins here.
I like that.
We have one more email question here, and this one is about daisies. So this is Lindsay from Urbana. Lindsay says that she has a daisy plant that has two flowers in bloom and two buds are getting ready to bloom. The flowers that are already in bloom are losing color and are starting to lose petals. So Lindsay's wondering, should I cut them to make room for the new blooms or let them continue to grow?
Well, you know, it sounds like they're in that mode of deadheading where we actually would move the flower, you know, as they fade to go ahead and remove them. And you certainly can do that. Now, sometimes with daisies, we actually kind of like them to reseed themselves. I kind of like some of the daisies to reseed themselves. So generally, I wouldn't go ahead and remove those older flowers. And the flowers can, you know, usually there's plenty of room for the flowers. So don't feel like you have to take them off. But for a lot of perennials, they will flower longer. You have more flowers if you do remove those older flowers. So again, do I want to reseed? Then you might leave them on. Don't really care if it reseeds or don't want it to reseed. I would remove the old flowers.
So we're just getting to sort of we're in the beginning of the summer at this point. The temperatures are doing fairly mild. You were saying earlier it's been kind of these nice cool, wet conditions.
Yeah.
What is going to grow well this summer and what is going to suffer as a result of the conditions?
Yeah, there's actually some concern, especially with lawns and stuff, that because we had, you know, plenty of rain there for a while, that actually some of the root systems, you know, sort of stayed at the top surface. So there's actually, it's one of those things that it sounds like a good idea, you know, having all this moisture and stuff. But for some plants, especially lawns and stuff that don't have an extensive root system anyway or deep root system, people may find that some of them actually don't do as quite as well as they thought simply because the root system aren't as deep as they thought because the roots didn't need to go deep because they were right there on the surface. There's plenty of moisture. So that might be a little bit, people may want to sort of keep an eye on their lawn or just realize that it may go dormant faster. Kentucky bluegrass is just one of those that goes dormant when it gets hot and dry. So that you may notice that,
right.
You know, if we do get in a hot, dry season. And then probably the other thing is, you know, for a lot of things, it's fine. We're finally getting the temperatures high enough. We were talking earlier about tomatoes and peppers and stuff that like heat. Sweet potatoes like heat. They actually didn't like that cooler weather we had. So people may notice that finally those things are starting to put on some new growth because it's finally hot enough for them.
Right.
So, you know, some things actually do better in the heat. So people may notice that finally. Oh, good. The tomatoes are finally starting to grow. So
Very quickly, we have about 1 minute left. Is there anything special you're trying to grow this summer?
One of the things that I'm actually doing potatoes. I don't traditionally do Irish potatoes, the white potatoes. And I did them in bags this year. So something a little bit different. I know maybe other people have done them in bags, these kind of potato bags, or you can do them in containers. So I'm really kind of excited to sort of see what happens with those. It makes actually harvesting much easier. You don't have to dig potatoes. If anybody's ever dug potatoes, they know exactly what I'm talking about because I've done that before. Is that it's a little bit of work to dig potatoes. So I'm doing the bag method. So I'm kind of excited. They're growing really well, and so I'm excited to see what happens with those. So it's always fun.
Well, Sandy Mason, thank you so much for joining us today.
You.
It's been a pleasure.
Great.
Where can people find out about the Garden Walks and about you online?
Yeah, they can certainly go to our website. And all you have to do is if you just go to the Extension website, so you just do University of Illinois Extension, that'll get to our main page. And then you can go to whatever county that you're interested in or one of the units.
Right.
And you can see what Garden Walks are going on in those counties. I'm actually located in the Champaign office most of the time, which is 217-333-7672. Or just check with your local Extension office. You know, just usually if you go to U of I Extension and the yellow pages, you can find what your local office is, see what's going on. And also always remember the U of I Plant Clinic. That's always a great resource if people have things that they need to have identified or are diagnosed or whatever, the U of I Plant Clinic. And you can also just search for U of I Plant Clinic, and they have great information, resources, as well as a great place to send stuff if you have questions. So.
Right. And you're going to be joining us here on Focus quite a bit this summer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I did want to say real quick that we are actually starting our Master Naturalist application process, too. So we have Master Gardener program. We also do Master Naturalist training in the fall. We'll start that actually the end of August. So if people are interested in Master Naturalist, you know, check with us or your local Extension office to see if they have that training program as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Sandy Mason, thank you for joining us.
Sure.
Sandy,
it's been fun.
Absolutely. And starting this month, Sandy will be here the second and fourth Fridays of the month for the rest of the summer. So if you have more gardening questions, listen to Focus those days and be sure to call in. Thank you so much for listening to Focus on WYLL. Between now and the next time Sandy's on the show, you can tweet at us with your pictures of your lawn or your garden questions at Focus580 or send them to us on Facebook. We'll be checking those pretty consistently. I'm Chris Berube. The producer of Focus today was Lindsay Moon. Our technical direction was by Jason Croft. You can find all past episodes of Focus by visiting us online at will.illinois.edu. Thank you very much for listening to Focus here on WYLL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. Jim Meadows will be back next week. Be sure to join us again next time. Thanks for listening.